Argument, National Maintenance and Repair v. Deary. Mr. Powers.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Judge Posner, Judge Williams, Judge Kane. My name is Todd Powers, and I'm here representing the appellant, National Maintenance and Repair. As you know, the issue in this case is whether a ship owner and employer of Jones Act seamen may file a counterclaim in a limitation action for recovery of property damage for negligence of that Jones Act employee. This case arises from the sinking of a commercial vessel on the Mississippi River, which occurred back in March of 2009. In connection with that sinking, my client, the appellant, filed a limitation action under the Limitation Act.
So what do you think that that the limitation of liability, your liability to Deering for his injuries is?
Under the Limitation of Liability Act, of course, if Deering is...
Well, a number.
What do I think? I would suspect it's not worth much, Your Honor.
Well,
you had an $800,000 loss?
Yes, sir.
And you're suing one of your employees for $800,000?
And yet you want to limit your liability to what the vessel is worth, $30,000?
After it sank.
Isn't it? Don't you think that's
kind
a
of a comical
problem?
Yeah.
We are pursuing the law as it is written.
No, I don't think so, really. I must say, look, here's a situation where, according to you, well, I don't know what his damages are, so let's just guess. Suppose his damages are $200,000, and the destruction of this ship is $800,000. So suppose the total loss from this incident is $1 million.
Sure. Right?
And you're saying, in effect, he gets nothing because he caused more of the aggregate damage than you did. Well, that's just contributory negligence is a complete bar to recovery, right?
Well, it's actually different, Your Honor.
He caused more of the harm, and therefore he gets nothing, right? But, of course, contributory negligence isn't a defense in the Jones Act.
Well, Your Honor, as you know, pure comparative negligence applies in the Jones Act, and it is our position that we're entitled to exoneration, meaning that this vessel sank as a result of the appellant's negligence, not as a result of any unseaworthy condition or any negligence on the part of the appellant. So in that scenario, my client, if in fact the lower court's ruling were to be upheld, what this court would be doing is declaring that the appellee is immune from liability for his negligence.
The only purpose, look, you don't sue these people. This is just set off. They don't have resources. You don't sue these people. This is just a set off, and it's a set off to a negligence claim. So it's a form of contributory negligence, but it's a form which always wipes out your liability completely because the boat is generally, well, if a death case might be different, but in many cases the ship will be worth more than the person.
That, Your Honor, the law in this case allows my client first to file a limitation.
That's your conclusion, right? That's your conclusion. The question is whether you can use a property damage claim as a set-off that eliminates your liability for personal injury.
Your Honor, that's the question only if the court were to presume that there would be recovery on the part of Mr. Deering in this case. And again, it's our position that the counterclaim must be upheld because it's the only avenue of recovery for my client of this $800,000. As to Mr. Deering's resources,
he may not have any avenue of recovery from a worker. Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor.
Right. And isn't it a problem for you that Supplemental Rule F doesn't say anything about counterclaims?
That is really not a problem, Your Honor, because the supplemental rules at A2 specifically provide that the civil rules are to apply unless they are inconsistent with the supplemental rules. And the supplemental rules have been applied uniformly since they were in existence to allow pleading such as counterclaims and cross-claims, as we've cited in our brief, and that must be the case, but because, of course, Rule 13 makes the counterclaim that we raised in this case compulsory.
But let me ask you this. What seaman would ever bring an injury claim in a limitation of liability type case if he thought he might face a huge counterclaim? Doesn't this effectively foreclose any kind of injury claim?
Well, Your Honor,
is that fair?
I think that there would, in fact, be an effect. I don't think I can be anything but candid in responding to that question. However, what I think the court is really directing to here is the lower court cited these prohibited devices under the FELA, and those prohibited devices are twofold. One is in Section 5 and one is Section 10 of FELA. And the circuit courts that have addressed this issue, and there have been, I think, five of them, actually four of them, the Fifth, the Fourth, the First, and the Eighth, have all held that a counterclaim is not a prohibited device under FELA because it does not exonerate the railroad, or in this case, my client, the vessel owner, from liability. It simply allows the recovery.
It's very artificial because the point is you would never, ever, ever sue these people for property damage if they didn't have a claim against you. That's why you're just trying to set off your negligence liability. It's not an honest counterclaim in the sense that it's something you'd file as an original suit if there were no suit by the seaman. It's just a defensive procedural maneuver.
Your Honor, I think
it seems to be a device. It's a device for defeating defeating personal injury claims. That's all it is.
Your Honor, it's the only opportunity that my client has in a scenario where it is not at fault to recover these damages. We don't know because we're not at a stage of the litigation to know whether Mr. Deering has insurance, whether there is some asset available to him. But there is not fairness or equity in a situation that would allow him to recover his damages and yet not allow, on a comparative basis, not allow my client, the appellant, to recover damages. There is nothing the general maritime law. In fact, the general maritime law traditionally has allowed such claims, as these cases that we've discussed in the Fifth Circuit, the Fourth,
not
and
such,
the First.
Not these set-off type claims, no. There's no history of that in maritime cases.
Well, Your Honor, as the Otto Candies case, the Fifth Circuit case, points out, there is, in fact, a history of allowing counterclaims in maritime law. There is a history under the FELA, and in fact, even the cases.
Yes, but I thought that there was no history of these of suing, counterclaiming against seamen.
Your Honor, there are I think, as the court pointed out, the Otto Candies case pointed out, it has not been addressed often, but when it has been addressed, the courts have held that in fact there is. There is a right to make a counterclaim in such circumstances.
Well, what about this Ninth Circuit case? It's California Home Brands versus Ferreira, and that was a contribution claim, an indemnity claim, and the Ninth held that the employer could not assert such a claim for contribution. Why shouldn't we extend that rationale to counterclaims?
Well, it's interesting, Judge Williams, that you bring that up, because that case never reached the issue of this case. In that case, what the court held was that there could not be a counterclaim for contribution or indemnity against a co-employee,
right,
because there was immunity in the first instance for that co-employee or co-worker, so that because it was an immunity or contribution claim and because the plaintiff had no claim to start with, there could not be contribution or indemnity. That's a logical decision based upon the law. The court went on to say that although arguments were presented on this prohibited device.
But notice what that means. It means that it means that the law will actually immunize a worker for liability, even though he's caused harm.
That's correct, Your Honor, but only where there is immunization for the co-worker. And that's what...
Well, that depends on how broadly device is read, right?
Well, no, I think on the facts of that case, Judge...
I mean, look, the purpose... It says device that whatsoever, the purpose of NEM shall be to enable any common carrier to exempt itself from liability. But that's exactly what you're trying to do. You're exempting yourself from liability.
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. This is not an exemption, certainly not an exemption where we would be immune from liability.
Because what it means that in every case in which someone sues for personal injury, if there's any property damage, you'll counterclaim. And also, with your limitation of liability, the property damage could be very modest and would still wipe out the person's liability.
Well, if this
will become routine, I suppose, in any serious accident. Well, you have to spend money scraping the blood off the ship, right? That's going to be part of your counterclaim.
I see that my time is up.
Well, it was negligent. He killed himself. He was killed, and it was a mess. There was blood all over the place. He had to wash down everything and have a bill, and that'd be your counterclaim, right?
Your Honor, in this case, that certainly is not our position.
In this case, but I'm talking about the logic of your position.
Your Honor, Jones Act Seaman has a right to a jury trial, and I personally would never recommend that such a claim be made. I don't think it would ever be accepted by a jury, and in fact, it would probably result to the benefit of the Jones Act Seaman if someone were to make such a claim, and I think that's
How do you think a jury would respond to this case?
I'm sorry?
How would a jury respond to this case?
I think based upon the facts of this case, a jury will respond by concluding that Mr. Deering was at fault here.
Even if he were seriously injured?
That's not the case on the facts of this case, Your Honor.
I asked you a question. Even if he were seriously injured?
If he were seriously injured, a jury may certainly decide differently.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Deering.
Thank you, Judge Quisen.
Ms. Anderson?
Good morning. My name is Christine Anderson. I'm here representing Mr. Deering. Your Honor, that is precisely the point. If this court accepts National Maintenance's position, the implication will be far-reaching. For instance, as this court is probably well aware, in Congress right now, they're revisiting the issue of the Limitation of Liability Act in light of the oil spill. Imagine if this court rules it's okay to assert a counterclaim against an employee for property damage in a Limitation of Liability Act action. All those oil spill workers are going to be facing huge monumental property damage claims, and there's no way that the chilling effect is no injured seamen will ever be able to recover appropriately for their damages, because generally the property damages far outweigh the level of the compensatory damages.
So are you arguing that a ship owner can never bring a negligence counterclaim against a shipment, or just in a limitation of liability proceeding cannot bring a claim?
Your Honor, the history of general maritime law shows that, in fact, seamen are afforded special status. The Whithart Court found only two cases in its research where a ship owner was ever allowed to assert a claim against a seaman, and that's because prior to the Jones Act, seamen didn't fall under the general common law scheme of being able to sue their employers for negligence, being able to sue their co-workers for negligence, or being subject to suit for negligence. And so Congress came up with the Jones Act to create a cause of action whereby an injured seaman could sue his employer for negligence. So I believe the better result, in fact, is that a ship owner should never be able to assert a general maritime claim against an employee for negligence, but certainly not in a Limitation of Liability Act context, especially because, as the Whithart Court noted in passing, general maritime law employs a pure comparative fault scheme. So in this circumstance, just to throw out some numbers, Mr. Deering, let's assume he's found 10% negligent in causing this accident. That's $80,000 he'll be responsible for on the counterclaim, whereas National Maintenance has asserted that their ship was only worth $30,000. That's their maximum liability, unless Mr. Deering can overcome the onerous burden of proving that the negligent acts were done within National Maintenance's privity and knowledge. So now you've taken a situation where the Jones Act was enacted to benefit and give a seaman every benefit of recovering with the liberal causation standard for his injuries, and you've completely flip-flopped the scales of justice. Now the ship owner's damages are severely curtailed. He has the extra burden of proving privity and knowledge, and yet the ship owner has to prove simple negligence, 1%, and it's entitled to part of its property damages. Clearly, this is not what Congress intended. Also, there's much talk about a set-off, as Judge Posner pointed out. This is clearly a set-off situation. These suits aren't brought unless there is a Jones Act claim. And none of the previous courts that have addressed this issue have looked at the second part of Section 55, which specifically said, Congress specifically said, what may be set off against a FELA or Jones Act recovery. And that is any sums that the employer has contributed or paid to any insurance, relief, benefit, or indemnity that may have been paid to the injured employee. Congress could easily have said, we're also going to allow a set-off for property damage. We're going to allow a set-off for uniforms and meals and transportation. They didn't do that. So clearly, they did not intend for these kind of property damage claims to be set off against the Jones Act damages. The fact that this is a device under Section 55 is bolstered by several things. The courts have routinely held that you can't bring third-party actions against coworkers. Those are devices. Obviously, a lawsuit can easily be a device, just as it was in this case. Likewise, the fact Congress intended Section 55 to encompass anything that relieves a railroad or ship owner from liability is grounded on, a good example is the circumstances surrounding the passing of the assumption of risk amendment. After FELA was passed in 1908, the courts were still using the doctrine of assumption of risk, even though the FELA, they intended to abolish that. So when Congress got together and debated, do we need to pass an assumption of risk committee, the House amendment, the House Judiciary Committee said, no, Section 55 is broad enough to cover the courts using this assumption of risk doctrine. We don't need it. They passed it out of an abundance of caution, but clearly that demonstrates that unlike National Maintenance asserts, device doesn't just equal contract. You know, at the time the FELA was passed, all these property damage claims were based on the employment contract. So when Congress used the word contract, they thought they were eliminating the property damage claims. But obviously it took 31 years for Congress to take notice and do away with the assumption of risk issue. Hopefully it won't take another 6 years for Congress to take notice and do away with these property counterclaims.
Did the Withart case discuss limitation of liability?
No. None of the prior circuit court cases have discussed limitation of liability. To my knowledge, the only case that has addressed a counterclaim in context of limitation of liability was a district court case out of New Jersey called In Re PMD Enterprises. In that case, the court noted the chilling effect and noted the harsh consequences of the property damage claim far outweighing the limitation fund. And they struggled with the issue, and the result they reached was a recommendation that we go back to the doctrine of pure contributory negligence and that the ship owner not be allowed to recover a dollar on its counterclaim if it's at all at fault, which is what the Kavanaugh court did way back when. When Kavanaugh was decided, Kavanaugh also said the counterclaim is governed by strict contributory negligence. Any negligence on the railroad's part bars the recovery. Even Nordgren, which is a case subsequent to Kavanaugh, the court said, it's a little unclear, but we're going to apply the state's common law, which would require the ship owner to prove that Mr. Deering was at least 51% at fault. That makes sense. If the court is going to allow these kinds of counterclaims, You can't, in the maritime context, use the pure comparative fault, then, especially in the Limitation of Liability Act context. And the Limitation of Liability Act alone, even without Section 55, gives this court the authority to uphold the dismissal of the counterclaim. Because otherwise, in a situation such as this, it's transformed from a protective instrument into an offensive weapon, which has been condemned by the Supreme Court and by this court in In Re Illinois Marine Towing.
I'm sorry. It makes limitation of liability an offensive weapon? Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. That's correct, Your Honor. And the Limitation of Liability Act, by its terms, well, by implication, I should say, gives the courts authority to effectuate its purposes, such as this court found in that In Re Illinois Marine Towing case, and this court is well aware, the parties can enter specific stipulations that are proper to send the case back to the state court forum. Likewise, in this context, the Limitation of Liability Act gave the court authority to dismiss the counterclaim. The employer has chosen to establish the damages, the property damages fund, at $30,000. They should be bound by that. They don't get the right to then go after the employee for the $800,000. I also wanted to point out that the question asked by Judge Williams earlier about Supplemental Rule F. In fact, the counterclaims that Mr. Powers referenced were in context of between ship owners. And the Admiralty Rules, Rule E, does govern clearly the situation that counterclaims can be brought among ship owners. That's fine. But the rule that deals with limitation of liability is Rule F. And nowhere, anywhere, does it provide the basis for a ship owner to file a counterclaim against an injured employee.
Well, F doesn't say you can bring a counterclaim, and it doesn't say you can't.
That's
right?
Correct.
It's just totally neutral on it.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, the rule, the Admiralty rule that specifically does reference the issue of counterclaims is Rule E7. And Rule E7 talks in terms of the issue on counterclaims applies only to actions in rem, quasi in rem, in personam. It doesn't reference the type of action that we have here, a general maritime action against a seaman for property damage recovery. Clearly, the policies underlying the Jones Act, I could go on and on about how this result is unfair and inequitable. It does not accomplish the purposes of Congress in protecting injured seamen. And injured seamen have stood in a different class even than railroad employees. There were wards of admiralty who were out at sea who couldn't apply for relief from a restrictive order to do something they thought was unsafe. And so the court has always afforded special consideration to their seamen. Likewise, in the maritime context, unlike the railroad cases, there was no body of common law that said a master could sue his servant. That just doesn't exist in the maritime context. And so allowing the counterclaim in this situation clearly is not in keeping with the general maritime law, the Jones Act, or the Limitation of Liability Act. Finally, I will note one more thing. Should the court wish to, they could also dismiss this case for lack of jurisdiction because of the issue of the untimely filing of the notice of appeal, which was the subject of a motion to dismiss, which this court found another document to constitute a sufficient notice of appeal. However, that document did not specifically say that they were appealing to this court, and so this court can even dismiss the case on jurisdictional grounds should the court choose to do so.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Anderson. Mr. Powers?
Briefly, Your Honors, if I understand Appellee's position. Any method by which my client seeks to reduce liability to her client is considered a device under FILA, a prohibited device. Therefore, under that logic, asserting a limitation action itself would be a prohibited device, and therefore the court would be called upon by that logic to dismiss the limitation action, which of course is preposterous.
Yeah, but look at continuing with her example. If you proved that Deering was 4% negligent in causing the property damage, 4% of 800,000 is 32,000. Your estimate of the liability under the limitation is 30,000. So on the basis of his 4% responsibility, he would get nothing.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, if he had never filed a claim, he would have had the same exposure to that liability regardless.
That's ridiculous. If he doesn't file a claim, you're not going to sue him, right? That's ridiculous. No claim, no suit by the company.
The other point that I wanted...
Is that correct?
Your Honor,
or do
I'm
you
not,
actually sue these impecunious people?
I will tell you this is the first time that I've made such a claim.
Mm-hmm. Of course not, because they have no money. Mm-hmm.
The other point that I wanted to address is the point of
it's phony about mm-hmm. these property damage, property suits. They're just set-offs.
The other point I wanted to address briefly is the point that was raised about counterclaims being permitted in limitation actions. And I would cite the court to the Val Marine case, which is in our brief, which cites cases including a United States Supreme Court case establishing that there clearly are counterclaims permitted under the Limitation Act. And with that...
What is the rule regarding contributory or comparative negligence in a property... In your property counterclaim?
That would also be pure comparative negligence under the general maritime law.
Well, wait, is this a general maritime law suit, this property
damages suit? Yes, sir, it would be. It would fall under the general maritime law. There would be admiralty jurisdiction. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel.
Thank you.